Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at the 1999 comedy Blast from the Past, directed by Hugh Wilson. Returning on the show today to talk about Blast from the Past is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So this movie, it feels like, you know, no pun intended, but it feels like a time capsule of like the 1990s. I think there's a lot of 90s music in there, like, oh yeah, they play that on like this radio station for like the 90s throwback or whatever. And it's got the, you know, Brendan Fraser and Alicia Silverstone, which maybe kids today who grew up, they probably wouldn't know who they were, but like they were in like everything in that decade.
The great thing though is that it works, I think, that people today wouldn't necessarily know who they are. Mm-hmm. Because it actually is better when those two characters are sort of unknowns. Because the star power comes from the parents.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Christopher Walken and Sissy Spacek. I know Spacek is usually doesn't do a heck of a lot today. And Walken, pretty much, he'll do anything as long as you give him money.
You know, interestingly, she played a mother in The Help that's a little bit like this character. Okay. You know, sort of the wise but suppressed, you know, woman character.
So it's interesting because, you know, this show is always about, like, we talk about these classic films and these classic directors. And I do like this movie, but I don't necessarily put this as, like, an all-time comedy classic. So what made you feel like you wanted to discuss it? Is this a personal favorite of yours?
This is just a personal favorite of mine. I don't think it's the best movie ever made, nor is it a classic. But I really like the heart in this film. I like the way it portrays, you know, the good old days. Like, you know, it's fashionable now to talk about Make America Great Again as if the 50s were this halcyon time. And what it shows you is that, yeah, we did kind of lose some things by moving away from that. But at the same time, it doesn't work at all in the modern age at all.
No.
And I also like the treatment that it gives the genius, insane dad. Who else could play that but Christopher Walken? Because he is, you know, certifiable, but I mean he's way ahead of his time. Mm-hmm. You know, he has he comes up with rollerblades before they exist.
He's got this amazing underground bunker that allows him to live for 35 years. That's impressive.
Well, it sort of makes you, if you could protect yourself completely, you know, if you could shut off all bad influences and only be steeped in good things and learn different languages and, you know, have a dancing lesson every day of your life. Wouldn't you think that would set you up for success?
Yeah. It's almost like it's his personal safe space.
Yes. Permanent. Yeah. It is kind of a safe space. And then, of course, a lot of the comedy comes from poor Sissy Spacek, who is so not enjoying a minute of it. While her husband, he's loving it. He's so in control of every aspect of his environment. And she, of course, is just trying to cope. It's fair. I think it has moments of sheer hilarity in it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I always like the parts that every time they get up, the people who are in that little area think they're gods or something.
Yes, leave my elevator alone.
And it's, you know, he's the father and it's the son and then it's the mother. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking it's this heavy religious thing.
Yeah, and that ice cream shop slowly gets seedier and seedier.
It's this, you know, it's just like this ideal 1950s, 60s, you know, soda jerk place. And then it's like this grimy, like heavy metal punk grunge place by the 90s. It's hilarious.
Oh, but first you have to go through, you know, the age of disco and then, you know, Teddy Pendergrass. There's some hilarious commentary there about the changing music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we were talking earlier. It's strange that we'll start with Brendan Fraser first. It's just, you look at him now and you're like, you know, whatever happened to that guy? Mm-hmm. Because he was in this movie. He was in a huge critically acclaimed movie, Gods and Monsters with Ian McKellen. He was in like George of the Jungle, Bedazzled or Bedeviled or something. And there's a lot more.
The Mummy.
Just a lot of movies in the 90s that even if they weren't critically hits, they made money. And he was a name or even a face where you could just like, oh, yeah, that's Brendan Fraser. And I looked at it as like, well, what's he doing now? Nothing rings a bell. And if it is like a movie like, oh, yeah, that was kind of a big hit, he's like random person in background number two, you know?
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think this movie is so unique, because he is so great in this. Mm-hmm. But I can't say I really like him in anything else he's done, because I liked him as that guy. He's perfect. it's really hard to find somebody who's believable as a 35-year-old who's completely naive about everything. But he pulls that off, and he's so charming and so likable that when you see him in other roles that are more dramatic, you think, you know, it's not the same character. And I know typecasting is like the worst thing to happen to an actor, but I just don't I find him random in other movies.
He is, you said typecasting, he's kind of like in this role, like the guy who's kind of fish out of water or completely unaware, like George of the Jungle.
But completely good-hearted.
Yeah, good-hearted.
You know, everything he says is so, it would be great if more people were like that. You know, it's not something you object to so much as you just think, you know, nobody knows why he's that way, so he just comes off as completely odd. Like, he must be from Nome, Alaska.
A little bit in the way of, like, it's character of Harvey, James Stewart's character, where he's just this incredibly nice guy. And so, okay, he believes that he's talking to a bunny, but he's nice to everybody, just says nice things. And it's like, well, why is he insane? He's completely just, he just doesn't do anything wrong.
Right, and he's harmless. And, you know, what's wrong with talking to an invisible rabbit, really? Yeah, there's so many wonderful scenes, too, where his honesty is taken the wrong way. You know, like my favorite scene is the one in the club, where he shows up because they're going out looking for, you know, girls for him to go out with. And they point him to this woman who looks like she's not going to have anything to do with him. And when he approaches her, she's not interested. But then he says something sort of off the cuff about, you know, I think I dropped my Congressional Medal of Honor. And she thinks this is funny. He, I don't know where he picked this up from.
Yeah, I have no
right?
idea what that was from.
And then when her friend comes over and they ask him if he knows how to dance, he says, well, you know, up until a couple of days ago, I had a dancing lesson every day of my life. And it sounds like a line.
Yeah.
But it's true. Yeah. And you see how, wow, you know, if your parents did teach you to dance, you would go out in the world knowing how to throw down on that dance floor the way he does. That's a great scene. If you actually look at it, he's not really doing all that much dancing. It's all in the cutting.
Oh, okay.
But it's fun.
That whole nightclub area is a bit like the Jackrabbit Slims in Pulp Fiction, where in that diner in Pulp Fiction was all of the 50s. This one was all the 40s. It even has that, I forget the name of that band, but like there was the swing revival in the 90s, and there was that da-da-da-da-da, that song that was being played. And you have somebody doing a Humphrey Bogart, who looks like Humphrey Bogart, by the way. Yeah.
And it works, too, because that's the kind of dancing his parents would know. You know, that would be, you know, they wouldn't have learned modern dances with the electric slide or anything like that. So he's still going to be a fish out of water. He's just, you know, in certain scenarios, he's just right.
And then we talked about Brendan Fraser. Another actress that was huge at the time was Alicia Silverstone.
Yes.
And she was sort of the huge it girl of the 90s. She was in this. She was in Clueless. She was Batgirl in one of the Batman movies. I mean, there's probably a bunch more that I'm not remembering right now. And once again, you kind of go, yeah, whatever happened to Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah, whatever did happen to Alicia Silverstone? I think this is also her best movie. She plays a really edgy girl who's, you know, world weary, which is the kind of person that, you know, Brendan Fraser's character needs to meet.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. She thinks he's the movie. She thinks he's just this weirdo or this creep, but then you know, finally realizes that she loves him. I know she recent news. She is in a movie that I know is looking at. I was looking at her IMDb. The most recent thing she was been in is a film that came out this year. It's getting a lot of praise. It's called The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Have you, know anything about it?
Oh, I don't know anything about it.
Okay. I've heard it's gotten really good reviews, but
that'll be another thing to add to my Netflix.
I'll have to check it out. And then we have to get to the parents. You know, of under actresses that I don't think get a lot of credit, even though she's done like everything and she's been acclaimed, she's won an Academy Award, is Sissy Spacek. Is that her last name, Spacek?
I thought it was Spacek.
Spacek, okay. But, you know, I think of her as Carrie. You know, Coal Miner's Daughter. The Badlands movie with Terrence Malick. This movie, she was also in a David Lynch movie called The Straight Story.
Yes, that's a great movie.
That's a great movie. You know, she's a great actress. And I always just feel that, you know, in the world of like Streeps and whatever, she's always sort of forgotten about for some reason.
Yeah, but every time you do see her in a movie, it's like, you know, finding an old friend, because she's always solid.
Yeah, she's great in everything.
And she's great in this. I love the scene where they realize that it's time to go back up, and everybody's in their pajamas, and they do this little dance. It looks so spontaneous.
I do love it when she goes up for the first time. And then she just has this weird, you know, everybody's praising her like a god again. And then she just has this weird look on her face, you know. And then, of course, then we got to get Christopher Walken. This is one of his most Walken-est roles, you know, just... Christopher Walken, like, along with probably, like, I don't know, William Shatner, is one of the most imitatable personalities of movies. I mean, everybody's got any impersonator's gotten a Shatner impression. They also probably have a Walken impression.
Probably.
Yeah.
And probably so. But he's always solid, no matter what he's in. You can't not watch him. Mm-hmm. He's really compelling. And I really like him in this because he plays himself.
Yes.
With a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And another line that I love at the end is when he's trying to grasp the fact that the bomb has not gone off. And so he's just throwing out things that he thinks are just as crazy. Like, I guess the Russians said our evil empire collapsed for us. And
they probably even asked for Western aid.
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, Brendan Fraser's character's like, well, yeah, they kind of did.
And he's never changed. And even you see at the end, it's a helicopter shot, and he's already planning to build another bunker.
Yes, he's already pacing off the next house.
Yeah. And even it's funny at the beginning when he's hosting the party, and he's telling all these jokes. And then, like, once she comes down in the bunker, he starts telling the jokes again like it's another party. It was reminding me of the beginning of Catch Me If You Can, when he's giving the speech. He goes, two mice filling a bucket of cream. One of them ran around the cream so much it turned into butter, and then he escaped, you know, something like that.
Right. Yes, that's the kind of story that he would tell.
Mm-hmm. So just keeping on the what are your favorite, like, Christopher Walken moments in any movie? I mean, I told you mine already, but I want you to go on first.
I love his reaction to the world when he comes up out of the bomb shelter and tells his son, you know, if you see a porn bookstore,
it's invisible gas. Yes.
He plays that kind of, you know, ridiculous thing very well. Of course, he's fantastic in The Deer Hunter.
Mm-hmm. That's more serious.
Yeah, so. He was really good. I was really impressed in Pennies from Heaven.
I haven't seen that one.
He's actually a pretty good singer. Of course, we've talked about that with The Jungle Book. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just such an interesting guy.
Yeah.
He did a movie back in... I guess it was the 80s with Sean Penn. I want to call it The Falcon and the Snowman. It was something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, that was a really good movie, too.
Oh, okay. You even talk about it, like, he's actually went to dancing school.
Did he?
Yeah, because there's this famous video. It's by this, like, kind of DJ artist named Fatboy Slim. It's called Weapon of Choice. And the entire video, it's just him dancing around, like, this empty, giant office building. And he's jumping around. He's, like, flying in the air. And he's dancing, and he's really good. It's not just him doing, like, goofy, quirky dancing. Like, it's, like, this guy's trained to do stuff. And it's amazing. Like,
one thing I really like about this movie is it's not so much about, oh, if we could control every single thing, whoever was in charge would, you know, have their worldview represented. But they really are trying to, like, raise a child to become a man. So there's all these great stories where he's, you know, trying to explain baseball to him, trying to explain what stock certificates are. He's just a really funny character in all of those moments because he's warm and he's engaging, but he's not always a control freak. There's a wonderful scene near the end where Adam comes back down and tells his parents that, you know, I can't explain it to you, and I just want you to trust me without asking me any questions. And Christopher Walken says, well, in that case, of course.
Of course. And then
said no parent ever.
Then, yeah. And then you see Alicia Silverstone, and she's just kind of completely, what?
Yes.
Yeah. And going back to Walken, I already told you this already, but for the listeners, one of my favorite all-time Christopher Walken moment is in a film called The Dead Zone. And it's this movie where he's, like, after an accident, he has this ability to see. Anytime he comes in contact with somebody, he can see their future and their death. And so he's tutoring this young kid because he's a teacher. And he shakes his hand or something, and he sees his death where he goes on, like, this ice skating trip with his friends, and he falls in the ice. And so, right after that, he's going on that ice trip with his dad's taking him. And he's telling his dad, don't take him, don't take him. And he goes, what do you know? And so they get into an argument. And then Walken gets his cane, slams it on the table, breaks the glass, and then he goes... In most Christopher Walken-est delivery, the ice is going to break. It's the greatest thing ever.
There's also a wonderful moment between Sissy Spacek and Brendan Fraser where she's preparing him to go forth into what she thinks may be an apocalyptic, you know, dystopian world, arming him with facts and telling him to write all this stuff down and telling him, you know, there may still be a Holiday Inn left standing. So, you know, look for that. Write that down. And there's something called a liquor store. Yeah. Write that down.
Because she's been drinking.
She's been drinking the cooking sherry, everything she can get her hands on.
And then she's like, make sure if you meet a girl, make sure she's from Pasadena.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And then at the end, Alicia Silverstone goes, oh, and by the way, I'm from Pasadena, just to make sure it works.
And it does. Yeah, she's thrilled.
So other performances in the film that stick out for you. One person I do want to mention, he doesn't really do much in the movie, but it's Nathan Fillion. He was the kind of the sleazy ex-boyfriend of Alicia Silverstone.
Oh, right. Okay.
And he's kind of big. He's big in a few things. He was in a show called Firefly that was huge. Another show called Castle, which I think is still going on, that's big. He's kind of in all like these sci-fi shows. I just want to give him a little shout out.
Okay, yeah. He has kind of a small role, but...
Yeah, I think that was probably one of his first roles, but yeah.
Another What Happened To.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to get back to one thing you were talking about, sort of just the getting back to the 50s or getting back to a simpler time.
The best parts, though.
And do you think that's sort of what this is sort of what the movie says, like, we got to get back to that time? Maybe not like everything, because the 50s wasn't perfect in every way, but it's sort of, you know, there's like, even when Alicia Silverstone and her friend are saying, you know, my parents never taught me that, it feels like maybe we've lost our values, and, you know, just being good, having good manners and being nice to people, that's something we need to get back to, and we haven't done that. Like, even showing where their house was, like, it was this quiet, nice little suburbia, and then it turns into like this grungy place where, you know, we're just never really taken care of, and looks like there's a lot of crime or stuff.
I think it does both. It on the one hand says, wouldn't it be nice if we were nicer to each other, and isn't it a shame that that's not the way it is? But it also shows that that doesn't really even work, even in the shelter, down in the bomb shelter, because his father tells him something about, oh, you can't tell what you wished for when you blow out the candles. And Sissy Spacek says, well, that's not what we believed in my family. And they have almost like a little spat. And you can't, you know, there's only the two of them. If you disagree on something, there's no way to bolster your point of view with, you know, other people or things you read or society. If it's just three people, it's very difficult to use those things. You know, he teaches his son to box because he thinks, you know, he might need it later in life, not because he's going to need it in the shelter. Mm-mm. And they both teach him how to dance so he can use that later in life, not because, you know, they need to dance in the shelter. I mean, it's all educational. And that part of it's wonderful. You know, the scenes where you see Christopher Walken trying to sort of pass on his great intellect to his son are really very sweet.
Mm-hmm. And even, I would say, even with the 50s, like, even shows the dangers of, you know, Cold War paranoia, because there's no nuclear holocaust, they think it happened, and because of that they spent 35 years of their life in a bunker, you know.
Oh, I think Christopher Walken was pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
Sissy Spacek not so much.
And another commentary, like, you know, obviously with the main character's name being Adam and Alicia Silverstone being named Eve, and they, once at the end when they get together and they get all this money from the stocks and build this suburban like community in the 50s, they call it the Garden of Eden. Is there some sort of, I didn't quite get this, but do you feel like there's like a religious, any kind of religious or thing, or was it like time to rebuild society like a Garden of Eden, where not have a place where there's crime and adult bookstores on every corner, but a place that's, you know, like the suburbs of the old days?
Or when you could leave your car on, you could leave your house unlocked. You leave your keys in the car. I don't know if there really was less crime, but let's say there was. That's something to aspire to. Yeah. Do we have to start over to do that? I don't know. I do think it's obvious that they named them Adam and Eve, but there's also a Helen and a Troy.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there's some names. I think they do have some fun with the names. Their name Weber, you know, really means weaver. There's an interesting way they weave all of the storylines together. And I love the way they kind of go back and forth between, meanwhile, down below.
Yeah, down below in the bunker. And, you know, with all this talk in the 50s, I mean, it's great. Like, Pleasantville came out almost the exact same year, I believe. And that's very similar. But while in that movie, it's about modern people going to the 50s. It's about a person from the 50s coming to the modern age.
It also makes me think a little bit of the Superman movies, because they're all set in that kind of era, too. Mm-hmm. And Brendan Fraser almost looks like a Superman kind of a character. The only thing I think they kind of didn't explore, but the movie would have gone on forever, is he has only a sense of wonder about everything. Mm-hmm. So he's amazed by rain and the sky and the ocean. But he's not frightened by anything. Nothing takes him aback.
Yeah, but I do think it's because he's just, this is the first time he's been out of his bunker where everything just seems great to him. He think he just has that side where nothing seems awful. I'm out of that bunker. You know, this is what I've always wanted to do.
Well, this is, yes, exactly. Yeah, maybe I'll meet somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but his character is almost childlike.
Oh, definitely.
In that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no sense of anxiety except for his first ride on the bus.
Oh, yeah.
And when he, you know, gets up to the the penthouse suite and looks out and sees all
huge city.
But I love when he meets Alicia Silverstone the next morning and she says, "You look like crap. What have you been doing?" And he says, "Watching television
in color.
Lots of those moments, I think, play off really nicely because they sound ridiculous to us, but it gives you a, what if you were seeing things for the first time? But I think a lot more things would frighten you, like traffic. He's no good at driving. There's one scene about that. But you don't see him being nervous about, wow, there's a lot of people. And, some of them may be mutants. That kind of anxiety and darkness is not really explained, unless you buy into the idea that if you could be raised in a hermetically sealed environment, you would have a positive outlook on everything.
Yeah,
but would you if you thought that there was an apocalypse? I don't know. I think it's missing a little bit of, yes, he's childlike, but he is 35 years old.
Okay, I can get that. I would say that because he's hermetically sealed, like you said, he's just, everything is awesome to him, and he just doesn't see anything as scary because he's just seeing everything for the first time, and that means everything's great.
He does pull it off, though. Mm-hmm. And, by contrast, Eve's character is she sees everything badly. Mm-hmm. Everything's, sinister in one way or another.
Yeah, it's sort of those classic story of the cold-hearted cynic whose heart warms up at the end.
Yes, yeah. It was won over. Mm-hmm. Even to Perry Como.
Yeah. So I do have a little bit of, there's a couple critiques I have with the film. I feel that the ending drags on just a far too bit. It could have just been ended with them getting together, but they're like, no, because, he has this baseball card collection and he's got all these old stocks. He's now a billionaire or whatever. And it goes on. And then this happens and this happens. And then he gets his parents out of the bunker and then he has to talk with them. So it went on a little bit too much. It's maybe 10. I would have cut like 5-10 minutes from the ending.
It does lag at the end because everything is now basically over and they're just wrapping up loose ends. You do have to have the scene where his father finds out that it was all for nothing. And I think that the scene about, the sudden wealth is the payoff for having given up 35 years underground.
Yeah.
If you had saved all of those stocks and baseball cards, maybe they would be worth a lot of money. And then wouldn't that be great? Because, you held on to them because you thought they were just nothing.
Now, one other criticism is, this is a criticism, a lot of like romantic comedies, there's the gay friend cliche, where he's the one who's always kind of makes the wisecracks. He's always supportive, and he's always the one that sets the woman straight. Like, you're in love with him, and you just got to get it together, sweetie. Stuff like that.
It is
very
a cliche
stereotype.
But you have to have a gay character because it would be one of the things you would want him to be confronted with that he hadn't been told about.
Yeah.
So he has no idea what it means. He thinks it means that he's really,
she's really
stay happy.
Yeah, and that's when he says, "I'm gay." He's like, "Well, good for you. So we could talk a little bit about the director a bit, Hugh Wilson. Now, I've only seen this movie. Looking up in his IMDb, it seems like he's done a lot more TV show work. He did work on the Bob Newhart show, work with Tony Randall on his show. He wrote the show WKRP in Cincinnati. So any commentary on his film? We did a film called Guarding Tess.
I don't think of this being so much his movie as writer Bill Kelly. Bill Kelly also wrote Enchanted, which I also love, and for the same reasons I like this one.
Is that with Amy Adams?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, she goes back into like a, it's a two worlds, like mm-hmm. the Enchanted animated world and then modern New York City. It's kind of similar to this in a way.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it has that same charm, you know, because the Amy Adams character is the innocent who, you know, arrives in New York City and has no idea of half the things that she is experiencing because she has this really positive outlook.
Okay, so then getting closer to my questions, is there anything else I haven't brought up or talked about that you want to bring up now?
I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
All right, fantastic. So then last question I'll have is just tell us a little bit about the classes you have.
Next semester, I will be teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, and World Cinema.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Hugh Wilson and his 1999 comedy, Blast from the Past. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Pastor Westhave, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, "You have a wonderful sense of humor, son. I must say, the acorn does not fall far from the tree."